You can't turn somebody down for a job all the time and say, well, you don't have the experience, you don't have the experience. Well, somebody's got to give them that experience for them to be able to move forward.
Welcome to Friday Five with Dave Adams. This series of podcasts with credit union leaders will help us stay connected during these extraordinary times and help us learn more about our peers. Today, I'm really pleased to be joined by Cheryl DeBoer, who is CEO of Advia Credit Union in Parchment, Michigan, with a presence in Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, and many offices around the state of Michigan. The credit union has 160,000 members and $2.4 billion in assets. I've known Cheryl for the 23 years that I've worked in Michigan, and I've been impressed with not just her credentials and her leadership skills and her propensity to be a lifelong learner, but I've been especially impressed by how she has held positions in credit unions from a very young age on the front lines as a teller and as a service rep, and has used those skills and that experience to become a great leader. So with 40 years of credit union experience, Cheryl has a lot to share with us about her leadership style, how she's approaching the current environment, and a little bit about her personal interests. I really look forward to a great conversation. Well, Cheryl DeBoer, welcome to Friday Five. I'm really looking forward to a great conversation.
Thanks, Dave. I'm looking forward to talking with you as well on this wonderful Thursday morning.
Awesome. I think we're all becoming experts at Zoom meetings and remote work. I guess that's the silver lining. But let me just jump right in. We were talking before. It's hard to believe that your credit union career journey spans 40 years. Maybe you could start there and just kind of describe how you got started in the credit union industry and movement, and describe your career journey for us.
Absolutely. I have been one of those people that have been very fortunate to find something I love doing early on. When I was in high school and planning for my future, I always wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to go to law school. I wanted to do practice law. And at that time, I was looking for a job, you know, to supplement and start saving for college. And a friend recommended this organization at 7 Mile in Farmington in Livonia that was looking for some help. So I went up there and come to find out that it was a credit union service organization, Service Center Corporation back in the day. And they were looking for, because I was 17, they were looking for a lobby hostess, somebody that would stand out in their lobby and check ID before the members got to the teller window, because lines were long. Technology back 40 years ago isn't what it was today. So it took a couple weeks, but they ultimately offered me that job. And I enjoyed that. And from there, the next job became a teller. And from there, the next job became an accounting department role. From there, I went on to be an accounting manager. It was a fast 10 years. 10 years went by in that organization. And I went to school during that period of time as well to make sure that I had a degree. I majored in accounting because I thought that would be beneficial. And I just loved it. I loved it and wanted to continue to progress. So, and here we are 40 years later. I still did go to law school when I was in my late 30s, because that was still, still something of interest to me. And I did my master's degree as well to make sure that I was staying relevant and productive for the credit union. You know, as a leader, I wanted to make sure that I was learning new things and developing myself as well. So it just has flown, Dave. It's just...
And that commitment to lifelong learning and to pursue your master's degree and law degree while working full-time is very impressive. You mentioned service centers, and that certainly was a model for ATM networking and shared branching early on. And I guess I just have one follow-up question. I know that it happens, but it's not all that common that a CEO of a large credit union started out as a service rep and a teller and all those positions. How much has that helped you as a leader to have really worked in all facets of a credit union?
I think tremendously, Dave. I have a little bit of background in everything, and I think very much so my team respects that. I know a lot about a lot, but I don't know everything about everything. And we talk about that regularly. And when I mentor people today, that's what they ask me. What do you think has been very beneficial to you in your career to help you grow? And I said, constant learning. I was willing to do any job they gave me. You know, if it was a, you know, 6 month stint in collections, I did that. If it was running a branch for a period of time, I did that. When we were doing mergers and acquisitions in the past, you know, could I go and be the person taking the lead? And I said, absolutely. You know, things that I had never experienced before, but until you've experienced something, you know, you've never done it. I tell my leaders all the time today, it's so important to expose people. You can't turn somebody down for a job all the time and say, well, you don't have the experience. You don't have the experience. Well, somebody's got to give them that experience for them to be able to move forward. And I feel very fortunate in my career that I always had people who said, you know what, she'll make this happen. You know, put her in the role. She hasn't done this before, but you know, we'll help her and we'll be successful. So,
well, if I were an executive recruiter and if I thought you might be available, I'd definitely put you on the short list.
Thanks,
candidates, Dave. For a big job. That's a pretty impressive career journey. Well, so let's talk about leadership. Leadership is a word that's thrown around, and you know, I have a similar tenure, I guess I would say, in credit union work, and I've had different leadership roles. And we read about leadership, we try to practice it, we try to mentor it. But for you personally, what are maybe one or two of the most valuable leadership lessons that you learned that you wish maybe you had earlier in your career? So you know a lot of things now, you lead a certain way, but what are a couple of things that you think young leaders should know about earlier on as they're becoming leaders?
I think one of the first things would be understanding risk. And making sure that when you take risk, you understand the upsides and the downsides. Because I think especially early on, I was very, very cautious, very, very conservative, because I was afraid of failure. I was afraid of mistakes. I was afraid of all of those kind of things. And I wish at the time people had said, well, let's understand if this decision happens, it goes great. Here's what happens. If it goes bad, here's what happens. Because sometimes you have to make a mistake to learn and to get better. And so I think that early on, if I had been feeling more supported in my ability to make a mistake or to take a little bit of risk, I probably would have been better at that, where I was, again, very, very conservative. So I would tell leaders, look at a situation and say it's a new marketing program. You want to run it. Okay, great. How much are we spending? What are we looking to get as a return on investment? If that doesn't work, how much did we spend and what did we learn from that, right? So I think that's very important, and I make sure that I mentor my leaders like that today.
That's excellent. And really, I think a lot of people fail to realize their full potential if they don't take enough risk or they don't feel like they have a license to do so. So having a board that allows you to make a few mistakes, or having a leader who encourages you to take risk, like you said, as long as it's measured risk, that's a great example of a leadership trait that I think it does take a while to learn, because at the beginning of our careers, we're more cautious. And I think that's really an important one. So the credit union difference, Advia is a credit union that I've watched the evolution from your rebranding and your expansion and your growth, out-of-state acquisitions and mergers, and just everything you've done in your 16 years there at the credit union. But through all of that, I also know that you've been a great credit union champion. And so the credit union difference, we talk about it often. What does that mean to you and to your credit union? And how do you see it playing out at your credit union, the credit union difference?
Thanks for asking that, Dave. I meet with all our new employees, and that's one of the first things we talk about, really, what is the difference? And, you know, I explain, you know, not-for-profit means that they're doing great things, but they always have to get, they have to get donations, they have to get support, they have to, I mean, it's sometimes very difficult. For-profit means sometimes you're more worried about the bottom line. We're kind of in the middle. We do a lot of great things, but yes, we still have to make money, right? We have to make money to do additional things for our membership and to do additional things to support our teams and our staff. So I think I explained that people understand that there is definitely a difference. We think about our members first and foremost before we think about the bottom line. Is the bottom line important? Absolutely. I mean, we're all feeling that today with the COVID pandemic that's going on right now, right? As we take in more deposits, our capital is going down. We have to be careful about that. As we experience losses, how do we recoup from that? And we have to make sure we pay attention to what we're doing for our entire membership. And that's, our credit union now has 160,000 members, and that's a much larger challenge today than when it was back when I ran a credit union that had 5,000 or 6,000 members. But we very much so do care what they say, what they think. The volunteer board that we have, it very much so understands that we could make money. We could make a ton of money, but does that make sense to our membership? Is that fair to the people that support us?
You know, we use that credo, not for profit, but for service, a lot. And we talk about how credit unions are different because of service. But, you know, one of my favorite stories, although I don't like everything about Apple founder and former CEO Steve Jobs, when he returned to Apple, and he said, you know, we need to stop focusing on the numbers and profit. If we make great products, everything will take care of itself. And I think what you just described in the credit union difference is just that. If you focus on the service and listening and taking care of members, man, you make the numbers. And you guys have certainly proven that at Advia. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So let's talk about this COVID-19 environment. Extraordinary times, obviously. Credit unions are on the front lines as essential workers, trying to take care of the extraordinary financial services needs of our members. So what's different in terms of strategies and how you're approaching business in this challenging environment?
Well, that's actually interesting. You know, in the very beginning, we obviously shut down to just drive-through service to try and make sure that we were serving members, but that our staff as well as our members were safe. And so we watched that. We watched an increase in our online products and services. You know, people were doing more with the mobile banking and the online banking products. But what we've seen now over time is, as we've slowly reopened a little bit more, is that our membership behavior went back to where it was, right? The online banking and things like that are still, having higher usage, but those that were in branch members are back to being in branch members. They didn't embrace that change in technology. I've been hearing for my whole career that branching was going to be going away, and you know, we heard that now, you know, this is going to go away. I just don't see the behavior changed temporarily because it had to, right? There was no other option. But the minute we opened the offices back up, we saw the split once again, the people that use the drive-through to the people that use the lobby. So, I mean, we've made some good changes. We have a concierge service now where people can make an appointment. If they don't want to come in and maybe risk waiting 15 or 20 minutes, they can make an appointment so they know when their time is. That has arisen since this environment. We've ramped up our contact center, obviously, so that people can get faster service on the phone if they need it, so they don't have to come in. It's definitely been a challenging environment, trying to keep everybody safe, right? Everybody safe. And knock on wood, I think we did a pretty good job with that.
And what about the longer term employee issues? It's an economic trend that transcends credit unions and financial services now, where more and more people want to work remotely. That's part of their desired organizational culture. How are you approaching that in terms of being able to accommodate certain positions for remote work and some, kind of the cultural issues that come with that?
Prior to this happening, we had already allowed for that. The fact that we have offices in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Illinois, we had to pick the best person for the job. And sometimes that person wasn't in the location that was closest to us. So we already did a lot of people working from home. So when this happened, it was really easy for us. Our IT team, in order to get several hundred, 300 people easily, working from home was a very easy process. I shouldn't say that. They'd be a little miffed if I said it was easy, but it was very fluid. They made it happen. We didn't run into any difficulties. The equipment that we had was able to make that happen. The headsets, all of that, you know, only those employees that didn't have good internet or maybe no internet at home ran into difficulties. So, but what we're finding is people are, when they could come back into the office, have started coming back into the office. They miss that camaraderie in person. They miss the the personal contact. This Zoom and conferencing, it has worked, and we had used it. We had already embraced this because of our geographical diversity. Our board meetings have board members on the screen, not all in person all the time. So we had already embraced this. But when it becomes everybody, it becomes much, much harder. So we have people who want to come back, and we're not letting them yet. They have distractions at home, which are, you know, difficult, but that's nature of what's going on right now. Kids home, even come September, we're running into that, right? Where schools are going to be virtual versus in person. So we're doing the best we can do. We're saying, you know what, we have no intention of bringing anybody back until maybe first of the year. You know, we're continuing to do what we're doing remotely for this period of time. We're also in the process of building a new headquarters, which is going to be open towards probably July, August of 2021. And people are excited about coming back to a fantastic new building.
Well, it sounds like, I certainly believe that for credit unions, especially because they were and are essential services providers doing all of this, you had to move so quickly to adapt to the stay-at-home order and to kind of take things as they come. And that really is still where we're at, right?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Again, we have opened our branches, but the back office support people that can do everything remotely are still doing things remotely. I've always come into the office for at least a good portion of the day because I don't know, I like to separate my home and my work life, because if I'm home working, I find that I work. And I've told people that. It's the same thing. I said, you need to figure out a way to shut that off. You know, you can't work 10 and 12 hours a day, right? Because that's human nature, especially during this time when people don't feel like there's anything else to do, right?
Right.
But we've tried to force that issue. We're forcing people to take time off. You know, people are like, well, where am I going to go? You know, I can't go on vacation, you know, to Florida or something like that. I said, I understand that, but you need to get time away from work. You need to disengage. You need to walk away. As a matter of fact, we just did a discussion the other day. I asked our HR representative, is that happening? Are people using their time? And she said, yes. You know, they had a little issue at first because they wanted to save it up for when they could do something. And but no, they're taking time because they know they have to.
Well, that comment is a great transition to my last question. I'm going to break it into two parts. And that is, okay, we've been talking a lot about work and leadership, but outside of work, what are your personal loves and passions? And I'm going to break it into two parts because during COVID, it's a different question. So maybe answer it in terms of, in a normal world, Cheryl DeBoer enjoys to ABC, and then kind of talk a little bit about, well, in this environment, what are you doing to stay sane and have those outside interests that are so important?
Be remiss if I didn't admit, as a leader, that's probably been one of my biggest challenges, right? Because I love to work. I love what I do. So personally, I have not always felt that I've balanced that well, my work and my personal life. And I've tried to get better at that over the years. And I definitely coach and mentor to that. Look, you know, I'm not telling you to be who I am. This is a personal choice. Nobody is making me do things the way I do. I think you need to spend time with your family. You need to go to children's events and do all those kind of things. So, but lately in my spare time, newly married, it's been 5 years now, just last week, as a matter of fact, to my husband, who's
Canadian. Congratulations still.
That's yeah. Awesome. So traveling back and forth, because mm-hmm. of his children being there and my daughter's in Iowa. So traveling, we love to do that, both of us, as well as we have dogs. So we have greyhounds, and we very much so have a passion for that. As a matter of fact, my husband's going to Iowa this weekend to pick up two additional dogs that we're going to foster for a period of time till they get homes. And then we're going to go to Kansas in a couple weeks to pick up a couple additional dogs to foster. It's just something we really love, just a gentle, gentle breed. And I also love to read. You know, I read both for academic learning and things like that, but I love a good murder mystery and a legal thriller. I still love things related to the law. So it's amazing how fast the time goes.
I think it's impressive how you describe being introspective about your own perceived shortcomings in terms of being a bit of a workaholic, and then being able to learn from that and coach and mentor others to perhaps do things a little bit differently. I think that's a great trait of a leader. Very interesting. Well, Cheryl, I appreciate very much the conversation. It's been fun talking to you, and I'm not the only one who looks at Advia and Cheryl DeBoer and are very impressed at the progress and the success you've had. I know you'd be the first to say it's a team effort, but truly your career has been impressive. What you've done at Advia continues to be impressive. And thank you very much for sharing your perspectives with all of us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. And we absolutely appreciate all our partners in the credit union industry, the Michigan Credit Union League and NAFCU and NASCUS and CUNA and CUNA Mutual. I mean, we've had so many great partners over the years that help us be successful and be who we are in this environment, the credit union environment. I wouldn't change a thing. People ask me that about my career, and I wouldn't change a thing. I again, as I said early, I have been very fortunate to find something I love and stick with it for a long period of time. I see people change jobs repeatedly because they haven't found that passion, or they do something that they don't enjoy to get a paycheck. And I have been very, very, very fortunate. I ended up in the right place at the right time and have absolutely loved this career in credit unions, and would do it again in a heartbeat. It will be hard to leave.
Well, thank you again. And as we were discussing before the recording here, the time goes so fast because we do enjoy what we do, and it's very evident in the conversation today, and that's contagious. Thank you for sharing it with us again today, and keep up the great work.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Dave.
Well, as I said at the beginning, I was expecting a great conversation with Cheryl, and that's exactly what we got. And as we look at the environment that we're operating in today, the challenges are so incredible. And I think all leaders, whether credit union or credit organization leaders, need to be able to adapt to whatever gets thrown at them. And so I think what we learned from Cheryl, among other things, was, you know, you have to keep learning, you have to keep adapting, and you have to keep coaching your staff with not just the things that you think are important for leaders, but also being introspective about your own shortcomings and use those to help your staff become better than even you have been in your career journey. So thanks again to Cheryl, and we look forward to future episodes of Friday Five with Dave Adams.